Last Sunday, I met up with Donna Hayes and her mother Sylvia in Northwest Portland's Cooch Park to talk about the debut of her new play, Silent Voices. In 2017, Donna Hayes' grandson, Quanis Hayes, known to his family as Moose, was shot and killed by Portland police officer Andrew Hurst. He was unarmed and on his knees. Including Moose, the play depicts the stories of 9 people who were killed by the Portland police, including Aaron Campbell, Bodie Phelps, Brad Lee Morgan, Christopher Kalonji, Jack Collins, John Elifritz, Kendra James, and Merle Hatch. The play was produced in collaboration with the Portland Playhouse and Open Signal, which provided volunteer videographers who filmed the actors performing their lines, and with support from the Pacific Northwest Family Circle, an all-volunteer community group that supports Oregon and Washington families whose loved ones have been killed or injured by police officers. Donna Hayes, thank you so much for meeting with me today.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So can you tell me a little bit about the play that you wrote?
They were killed by police, and their stories needed to be told. It brings them back to life. So they get a chance to tell their stories, talk to their families.
Yeah, and your grandson Moose is one of those characters.
Yes. He was so easy to write about. Everybody else, I had family members I could talk to, because Moose was the easiest to write. That was my favorite grandchild.
And he would have just been 21 in August, is that
yes,
right?
August 2nd would have been his birthday. I had promised him that I would take him to happy hour when he made 21, but needless to say, that didn't happen. And so my honor is the plate for him. And it got a chance to tell his story, the type of person he was. I'm part of Pacific Northwest Family Circle, and they're a group of family members who lost their loved ones.
So you got to know those characters after they died, and you got to know them through their families?
Yes, their families. I would talk to them, and they'd tell me stories about their family. Most people that lost their children or family members want to talk about their family members. So it was easy for them to talk to somebody who wanted to listen. People who I didn't know, I took newspaper articles, and I didn't take articles that where the police was just beating them down. I took articles where families and friends talked about them. I didn't want the play to be all boo-hoo and I'm crying about everybody. I wanted it to be lively. I wanted people to know what was taken away from us. They were alive people, real people, and they was removed from us. I hated a lot of the newspapers' versions of these people. For instance, John Elifritz. First thing they hollered out was that he was a white supremacist. I didn't like that. I know his wife. I talked to her. Her child, and they had memories of him that wasn't white supremacy. They had memories of sitting on the couch, talking, dancing, laughing. And these are the things I wanted people to hear.
And aside from Moose, is there another favorite character that you have in the play?
They did a rough cut of Kendra James, and they gave me that one. With so many people, I meet so many people, I can't keep track of everybody's name. But the young lady that did it, she was just awesome. Brought me to tears. I just met Kendra James' mother yesterday, and I'm so sad that I didn't meet her before, because I listened to her yesterday tell some stories about her daughter. It would have been so nice to have that incorporated in the play.
But you met a lot of the families, the other families you met through this
family circle. Did everyone that wanted to participate in the family circle that was in the Portland metro area. My next plan is to go to Detroit and Louisiana. I know people there. They have organizations there that can reach to other people. And then I can write about them. I want them to be able to see this play. Let them see what could be done for them.
Film this in a socially distant way. It's a really interesting experiment in theater to be able to do that. And you did it in collaboration with Open Signal. Can you talk a little bit about that process?
We had cameras all over the place, and they was at distance. wasn't a crowd of people. One person at a time did their part. It was monologue, so it made it easy for everybody. This whole play was all volunteered, from the actors to open signal to the building we use. It's pretty much just giving people, bringing them alive. I have one character. It would seem like a love letter to their mother. One was sad because he was going through a mental health crisis, saying, I know his mother gonna cry.
Is it gonna be released on open signal? How can people see it?
Come downtown and sit down in the park and see it on the Justice Center wall. That's where my first showing gonna be, and then I'll put it on YouTube.
Okay, and we will definitely do a plug on Old Malt that's released. How did you record the stories?
A lot of it I kept in my head. Sometimes I would write things down, but most of it was in my head because I had to figure out how I was going to create it. So that's where I kept it at.
So you've also started the car caravan that goes from PCC, and clearly that's doing a lot of the same work of resisting police violence. Do you want to talk about that?
I was sitting over at a friend of mine's house, Jill Nicholson, and she was going through her phone, and she seen a car caravan in another state. And she said, Donna, you want to do a car caravan? And I said, yes. And that was the beginning. When we started, it was quite a few people. We felt kind of overwhelmed. So we put out feelers for somebody to help us with traffic control, and a lady named Adrienne came along, and she brought in her nephew, who was a motorcycle rider, and he helped keep things in order. And next thing you know, we had last Friday 13 motorcycles. We felt empowered the way they acted, directing traffic, blocking traffic. And we get out and we see people that come out and they run out with their signs saying, in solidarity. We get a few people that say things. We had a man that said, all lives matter. We had a megaphone and I hollered out, all lives can't matter until black lives matter. He just shut up. We didn't have people run through the crowd. One of the reasons why we had the motorcycles and a traffic trading before we go is to keep ourselves safe and keep the other person safe. We had a car that wanted to bust through our caravan, and he ran through and T-boned another car. And I mean, if he had taken that moment and stood in solidarity with us, he wouldn't have been in a traffic accident.
Were you doing organizing work, political work, before this was killed?
Not really. I mean, I had a Facebook page. I see a black person killed, I would post it. And I maybe have a comment, but nothing really serious like now. I really don't want to see somebody else join our club that nobody wants to be in. When I got in with Pacific Northwest Family Circle, one of the people that started it came to one of our visuals. And she pulled me aside and she stopped me with all these tears. That's all I did from the moment I found out he was dead until I seen that woman. And she said, do something. Don't just sit and cry. And my mother, and 77-year-old mother, sat there and fight. She actually was a person that marched with Martin Luther King back in Chicago. So for me and my mother get in the mood, we get our staplers and our glue, and we put it all over the neighborhood. This neighborhood is not as receptive of the flyers as the old neighborhood we lived in North Portland. North Portland, people took a moment, read the signs. Signs stayed up, except in the area of the police station. They took them down.
You know, you hear a lot now, Black Lives Matter and the Portland protests have been hijacked by fringe elements or by white people. What would you say to that?
Personally, I don't care. They want to stop this. If you go through our caravan, you might find 5 black people. The rest is white. This is a white city. You know, we won't be able to do anything without white. I love the sight of the Federal Building. I couldn't wait when I went through. I just filmed it. I thought it was beautiful. All the messages, letting people know. I love the ACAB. I love that. Every time I see a cop, when I'm on my megaphone, that's what I scream out. So I've seen paintings all over the city of my grandson. I went down a neighborhood, and it was a beautiful neighborhood, and they had a little park going down the middle of the street. And on every tree, from one end to the other, had a list of black names. You go around the other side, it had a list of black names. I took the caravan that way. And as we go down, I was screaming out, say their name. And the people in there came out in solidarity. The more people stand up and be educated, because some people need to be educated. And we put things on our car sometime that is educational. And that's the major thing. The play, the caravan, Pacific Northwest Family Circles, when they out protesting, all of it is education. I stand by Black Lives Matter because it's this group of people who's fighting for their lives. But it's not just black lives that they're killing. And I believe that anything that Black Lives Matter does benefits every race in this country.
Yeah, you make me think about James Chassie.
Yeah, just beat that child.
The film Alien Boy, which really kind of captures that.
We got so many people that's just killed for no reason at all. If you got a person, like for instance, my grandson, who's working to do what you say, you telling him, raise your hand, crawl out, do these things. And
he was literally on his knees when he was shot.
Trying to do what they said, but it was too many voices coming at him. He was scared. He probably had his pants coming down. And Hearst killed him. And if people would read the public notice, Hearst knew him.
How did Hearst know him?
My grandson beat up one of his relatives at a fight. He was a kid. Okay. And Hearst knew him.
So he would have been 21 on August 2nd.
Yes. Another thing about him, and that was in the play also. He used to come to my mama's house every 2 weeks or so and sit in one chair. And my mother thought he was coming over to see her. We don't think so. He would sit there and hold the dog for an hour, 2 hours, maybe 3 hours. And the dog would sit right there on him. And when it was over, what did he tell? Bye-bye, Gigi. The while when Qantas didn't come over, the dog walked through the house, head hanging down, didn't want to be bothered with nobody. So the dog grieved. That's the type of person he was, that he had a dog grieving. And the whole family hurt. I mean, he made us laugh. That was one of his superpowers when it came to the family. Most everything I do is because of him. Before I recognized the killing of people, it broke my heart, but I didn't reach out. And once it happened to me, I had no other choice but to reach out. My thing is, I don't want other people to have to join this crowd. Get out and fight before it happens to one of yours.
You've been listening to an interview with Donna Hayes, grandmother of 17-year-old Qantas Moose Hayes, who was killed by the Portland police in 2017. Her play, Silent Voices, which features the stories of 9 people who died at the hands of Portland police, was produced in collaboration with the Portland Playhouse and Open Signal. If you're interested in joining the car caravan, it meets on Wednesdays and Fridays in the parking lot of the Portland Community College Cascade campus near the Student Services Building at 6 p.m. The Friday protests will soon be moving to Saturday, so keep an eye out for that change. This has been Desiree Helgers for the Old Mill Variety Hour. Before there was
Trayvon. This song is dedicated to Deontay J. Keller, who was shot by Portland, Oregon police in 1996. Before there was Trayvon. And all the others across the country who have lost their lives in senseless violence to the man in blue.
License to kill, they get away with murder. Plant the evidence at the scene, throw away burner. They'll say they felt their life was in imminent danger. Another sister or brother slain by a stranger. Murder one of us every 28 hours. Undeclared warfare, that's white power. If you're indigenous or African American, they use the media to assassinate your character.
For it to make sense, I'd have to be convinced they're predators amongst us with malevolent intent. I could have a confrontation at a moment's notice. Sandra Bland, Tamir Rice, Keaton Otis, James Perez, and Kendrick James, Deontay Keller, too many names, Oscar Grant, and Aaron Campbell. How we gonna set a different example?
January 29th, 2010, Aaron Campbell was shot in the back after being distraught from losing his brother earlier that day. Shot within 24 seconds after being stopped for failing to stop at a stop sign and driving in the car.
The state of the nation is pacifying the masses with sadistic tactics. Communities live in fear, wondering how many will die this year and how many more will remain silent in the face of violence. People hold their breath, knowing it's liberty or death. Headhunters decapitating movements, breaking nations into fragments, and race is said to be coincidence rather than evidence. That the state of the nation is extermination. Blood of fathers, brothers, sisters, mothers staining America from Oakland to Providence. Forced silence, government-funded violence. Armed forces are targeting melanin once again, and homicide is justified when it's genocide. But how many more black folks are going to be crucified for the sins of America?
Before there was Trayvon.
May 23rd, 2003. Kendra James was shot inside her car on the skid. By Portland police.
Before there was Trayvon.
February 22nd, 2002. Byron Hammack Jr. was shot in Motel 6 after having a confrontation inside his motel room.
On February 28th, 1996, my son, Deontay J. Keller, was pulled over by Portland police officer Terry Krueger. Unfortunately, he jumped out the car and ran. Unbeknownst to him, a shot was fired, and he was shot in the back. But he continued to run, even though no shots fired call was called into the dispatch. Police found Deontay about three houses down in the backyard, lying face down, but he was still breathing. They handcuffed him and called for medical. Medical arrived at 2:23 a.m., but the police would not allow the medical to come in until 3:41. Within that time frame, Deontay died.
Before there was Trayvon.
Just listening to the song Before There Was Trayvon by Joe Bean Keller and featuring Taria Autry and Mike Crenshaw, among others. The song is dedicated to Deontay J. Keller, the son of Joe Bean Keller. And the dedication reads, "Dedicated to my son, Deontay J. Keller, who was murdered, shot in the back by Portland police officer Terry Krueger on February 1996, and all the other young and old people of color across the country that have lost their lives to unjust and illegal behavior by police." This has been Desiree Hellinger for the Oldham Variety Hour.